This episode is brought to you by Progressive, where drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. Plus, auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Quote now at progressive.com to see if you could save. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May of 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Stay connected this winter with this unbeatable deal from Breezeline. Get reliable, fiber-powered internet for just $19.99 per month with all-in pricing for 2 years. But that's not all. Your first month is on us. This deal gets better with a free modem and installation, along with free Wi-Fi your way whole home coverage. Safeguard your network from cyber threats and keep all your devices connected and secured with this amazing offer. Act now. Terms and conditions apply. Offer expires March 3rd, 2024. Learn more at Breezeline.com.
There's no place to escape to.
This is the last podcast.
On the left.
From your glade.
That's when the cannibalism started.
What was that?
Hey, what's up, everyone? I am Ben Kissel, joined by Henry Zebrowski.
Yeah.
This is a special episode focusing extensively on Zombieland Double Tap. Of course, Zombieland, the first film, came out in 2009. In this episode, we're going to discuss a little bit of what we loved in the first Zombieland, and we had a great honor to interview Ruben Fleischer, the director of Zombieland 1 and Zombieland Double Tap. Zombieland Double Tap comes out October 18th. Make sure you go check this film out. But Mr. Henry Zebrowski, let's do a little bit of conversating about why Zombieland was such a badass film and how it combined horror and comedy so well.
Well, Zombieland is a rare horror comedy where it is as funny as it is, as it has a good old dash of violence in it.
Yes.
I love the very, it's got really great special effects, and it is genuinely funny. And it was from 2009, which was simpler times, especially the world of horror, because there's such a glut of zombie material now, where at the time, Zombieland was very fresh, and it was such a smart and fun take on the genre, and it came from a bunch of people who kind of understood what the hell they were talking about.
And of course, it was from the writers of Deadpool 1 and Deadpool 2, so they get character, they understand how to be funny and extremely violent. And the craziest thing about Zombieland is, it's one of those, other than Woody Harrelson, every other person, Emma Stone, Jesse Eisenberg.
They were all unknowns.
Yes, Abigail Breslin. They all had a little bit of steam, a little bit of clout. But for the most part, Emma Stone since then has won an Oscar.
Yeah.
So it really is a movie that you rewatch and you're like, how the heck did they get this cast together? This is unreal.
Well, they're bound by nostalgia. Because you don't want somebody else to take your role. You don't want somebody.
Not.
Yeah, you got to fight for that itch. And Zombieland, I remember watching it. I went with my friend Jeff Darlin. We went to the theater, and that opening just rocked my tiny Polish nuts off.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I think it was one of the first movies that like fully understood that when you're a fan of comedy, you can also be a fan of like a zombie being chopped in half with garden shears. You can be a fan of like just blood splattering all over the screen. It reminds me of the old school films like Dead Alive. You know what I'm talking about? Where it's so over the top and it's so gory, where it comes to the point where you're like, this is just straight up funny. And I love the way that he just makes that world like so real and so fresh and also just so gritty, but you can't help but laugh.
What I read is that this was also originally the first pitch of this was a Left 4 Dead movie. Remember the video game Left 4 Dead?
Yes, of course.
That was fucking awesome. Whole slail. All it was killing zombies.
Right.
And that is what I loved about this movie is that it has the same sort of vibe. And again, it did the really good postmodern comedic take of them. Which, that was what I was always focused on. When I was used to watch zombie movies as a little kid, I remember thinking about being like, well, what does everybody else do? Like, once the zombies are gone, like, why don't you just like live? You can live a life. You get to go into people's homes, look through all their medicine cabinets, look through where all their underwear used to be. You could go and watch all their DVDs.
You can do
whatever
you want.
Drink all their booze. Yeah, do whatever you want.
That's the thing. And, you know, booze lasts forever. So if you are in a post-apocalyptic world, how many months do you think it's fun before you're like, I miss my friend Charlie? How many months do you think it's just like, this is actually the best thing that's ever happened? You get to get the aggression out by seeing a zombie every now and again and shooting it at the head with a shotgun. So that's kind of fun. And then you also just get to go live in a mansion. And in the case of Zombieland Double Tap, they get to live in the White House.
If you got a good collection of buddies towards the end, then I think that you can last for forever. You have to have, what's nice is that everybody's standards are lower. So if there's just one like beautiful woman that chooses to be with you, then you can have a girlfriend. You know what I mean? You have a girlfriend? You don't got to get married then, because there ain't no laws, there ain't no lawyers out there.
But of course, there are many laws in Zombieland, and then there's new, I guess not laws, there's new rules in Zombieland, Double Tap as well, which I think that is actually what kind of made the first Zombieland so much fun, was that kind of like rural structure. Like when the person flies through the car and then rule, like whatever the number was like, always wear your seatbelt.
I loved it.
It was such a great way to like get a punchline in. Basically, you show some violence and it's like, and how it ties into a rule. I just thought that was a brilliant way to get the punchline through. And then we also got to see the reason why the rule was invented, which is because someone's about to get brutally murdered.
Again, just give me murder. As a viewer, as a consumer of horror films, just give me the murders. Yes. That was the thing. I did that Ready or Not movie, which I really, really loved. I love that fucking movie. But I could have used with a little bit more murder.
Well, this is a question for you, Henry. If you kill a zombie, is it murder?
No, it's the same way as you kill a Nazi in Wolfenstein. It's the same thing. It's not murder.
Justified. So that's
it's all justified. You're allowed to do whatever you want. It's so much fun. That's where you get to really fully release. You get to finally be you.
Just to totally nerd out here for a second, Zombieland happens, right? It's you and I. We get to survive. Marcus is definitely going to survive because he's going to dig himself a full-on ditch, and he is going to be safe forever because Marcus is a survivor.
I think by then he truly will have abandoned us, though. You know, honestly, I think at that point he will finally know I don't have to take care of these men anymore.
No.
And we're like, well, we can totally handle it on our own, buddy.
So at what point do you create zombie, pro-zombie laws? Where you say, you know what? Zombies are now protected. You got to stop killing all these zombies. If you kill a zombie, you're going to get in trouble. Because at some point, we're going to have to get back to a humane society.
I choose, I would not fight for a zombie, but I'll fight for a robot. This is the thing that we've talked about this. I will fight for robot rights, but zombie rights, these are aliens on our land and must be expunged.
Oh, my God. You're very extremist on this.
Must be expunged.
I love it. Zombies versus robots, by the way. That sounds like a next. Maybe Zombieland 3 will be zombie versus robots.
Yeah, it sounds like a movie that Tara Reid has already said yes to.
She is wonderful. All right, everyone. Now it is time for our interview. This, honestly, Ruben Fleischer was unbelievably kind, and we really could not be thankful enough for him to take some time to sit down and chat with us. So enjoy the interview, and don't forget, October 18th, Zombieland, Double Tap. Get your tickets. Henry and I have ours. It is going to be a gory good time.
Live from your grave.
Today we are honored to have with us Ruben Fleischer. He is the director of Zombieland and Zombieland Double Tap. Zombieland Double Tap comes out October 18th. Make sure you go check this film out. Ruben, thank you so much for being on the show.
Yeah, of course. I'm thrilled to be a part of it.
Hell yeah, dude.
I love Zombieland. I remember seeing it. It probably is one of the best intros to a horror film, especially in the last decade. We're very excited to see Double Tap.
Yeah, it's really fun, the new one. We really just want to recapture the spirit of the original. And so there's a lot of things I think that will feel familiar, but then there's also a lot of really fun new situations that we put our characters in.
Yeah, I mean, obviously you got a lot of the old cast coming back, everything that's old is new again, plus some new additions. You know, as a podcast, we do a lot of horror and comedy. We sort of combine true crime with humor. And I think Zombieland the first one that I saw just did such a great job of combining humor with, you know, a zombie getting its head cut off by garden shears. How do you weigh the humor versus the gore when making something like Zombieland and Zombieland Double Tap?
Well, for me, I was came up more as of a comedy fan, so I've always kind of leaned more in that direction.
Right.
But you can't have a zombie movie without some horror. So we always tried to make it as fun and entertaining. And I think that goes back to the tradition of zombie movies, which always have kind of a camp factor. And some of the, you know, fun of a zombie movies are the creative ways that you can kill them, which is why in the new Z2, we've maintained the zombie kills of the week, but we've elevated them to zombie kills of the year. And we have some really fun, creative ways to take out zombies in this new movie.
So nice. Excited. So excited to see it. As a horror fan, I watch every new horror movie that comes down the pipe. My thing is, I think anything can be saved with the liberal amount of murder, right? You just do it creatively, I'm already sold. But because comedy and horror are such common pairings, the only real successful ones for me, in my estimation, are the ones that really show character through the humor.
Right.
That are grounded, and it comes from the relationships between the characters and murder.
Yeah, that's what we really focused on with this movie, is the relationships, you know, because ultimately it's a family movie. It's at its core. You know, for me, the sort of reference point for the original was Vacation, and that there's people going on a road trip to Wally World, so to speak. But in our case, it was Pacific Playland. But with this movie, the family's fractured a little bit. Little Rock isn't so little anymore. That's the character played by Abigail Breslin, who was 12 in the first movie, and now mm-hmm. 10 years later, and she's a young woman who wants to leave the nest and go out on her own way and meet a boy and just have experiences outside the you know, somewhat oppressive thumb of Tallahassee.
Right.
And so she takes off with this, you know, every father's worst nightmare, which is a musician played by Avan Jogia, whose name is Berkeley. And not only is he a musician, but he's a pacifist. And I don't know which one Tallahassee hates more. So they take off, and then it's up to Tallahassee, Wichita, and Columbus to go get her. But the kind of fly in the ointment is that in the time that Wichita has also been away, Columbus has met this new girl named Madison, who he met at the mall, where she says it was like Dawn of the Dead. I was just living in a mall. She was living
yeah,
in
course.
A freezer at Pinkberry. She is kind of the fly in the ointment as she becomes a bit of a impediment between Columbus and Wichita.
So obviously the first installment of Zombieland, the characters were very well defined. Obviously Woody's character is just this sort of like, you know, badass dude, sort of taking control of a lot of situations aggressively, but also with a lot of humor. How did you and your writing team sort of re-sculpt those characters, make them new again? And then also when it comes to the additions of people like Rosario Dawson, Zoe Deutsch, Thomas Middleditch, who we've known for a long time, and of course Luke Wilson and Avon, who you mentioned, how did you sort of sculpt their characters to fit with, you know, the characters from the first film? How have the characters from the first film evolved? And what's the relation like with now these new people involved?
Well, I got to give credit to Wernick and Reese, the writers of the original movie, who also wrote this movie and also wrote a little movie called Deadpool and Deadpool
nice.
2.
Nice. Awesome. The best superhero movies. I love those films.
Yeah, they've nailed this sort of like self-aware comedy voice that I think we see with Deadpool, and that Columbus has aspects of as well. But they created these really clearly defined characters in the first movie, and we're just lucky enough to cast the incredible people that we ended up with, and they really embody the characters. In terms of updating them, I wouldn't say that so much has changed. I mean, Columbus is neurotic and you know, kind of insecure, and his life is defined by rules as ever, and Tallahassee is still the red-blooded American that he's always been.
Right.
It's not so much that their personalities have changed, just the dynamics within the group have changed. Tallahassee wants a little bit, he's feeling a little bit like he needs to go on in his own way and be a true to his lone wolf self.
Right.
Wichita is a stone, rolling stone that gathers no moss, and she wants to, everybody's kind of just feeling a little stir crazy, I guess. They've been living in the, when we meet them, they've been living in the White House for, we have to assume, a few years, and I think they're all just kind of getting a little antsy, with the exception of Columbus, whose drive is always just to, you know, keep the family together, and in this one, it's really just to find a home, which is where they start off with. He says, "You go big or go home," and we went to the biggest home we could, which is the White House. but as far as the integration with the new characters, again, it was just to the credit of the writers who created these, you know, really strong characters and kind of archetypes that allowed us to cast some really amazing people. Zoe is a real discovery as Madison, who's like a kind of millennial type girl who is, you know, only been reading Us Weekly circa 2007. She's just clad in Von Dutch and Juicy Couture tracksuits and is living her best Paris Hilton, Lindsay Lohan life at the mall when they find her.
She'll be sad to know Jennifer Aniston still hasn't found a boyfriend, because I think that's been on the cover of...
She can't get pregnant!
I know! Oh, my God!
It's all kind of the same. Yeah.
Yes, indeed.
So they meet, and then, and she just lived, brought this character to life in just such an amazing way. She's so funny in the movie, and I can't wait for people to see her. And then Rosario is just someone I've been a fan of forever.
Oh, yeah.
And when you kind of think of who would be a good match for Woody Harrelson, just this badass, zombie-killing, Elvis-loving guy, Rosario felt like, you know, she could meet his match. And so there's an instant kind of attraction, but also a competition between them. They just have incredible chemistry between them, and it's really fun when we meet her in the movie.
Awesome.
And then as far as Thomas and Luke, I mean, I don't want to say too much, but I think you can tell from the trailer that there's like a doppelganger bizarro thing going on with Columbus and Thomas, and then Luke and Woody. And it's a really fun sequence in the film that I think is probably going to be a lot of people's favorite.
Yeah, those guys are brilliant.
How was it getting the crew back together after 10 years? The actual actors, is it the same vibe?
Yeah.
Do you feel like you have to catch people up? Do they now have to, they have like highfalutin ideas about their characters? How does 10 years change things?
Yeah, was it like the Blues Brothers where you're like, we're getting the band back together?
Yeah, there was an aspect to that. But I mean, if you think about 10 years ago, when we made the movie, Emma was 20 and no one knew who she was.
Oh, yeah.
We'd try and sneak her into bars and they'd be like, no, she can't come in. And we'd be like, but she's this actor in the thing. And then be like, it doesn't matter. Like, you know, you could walk down any street. No one knew who she was.
Right.
And since then, she's won an Oscar. So, you know, it was a little awkward the first day when she insisted that nobody look her in the eye. Yeah. And, you know, we couldn't talk to her directly and that we had to talk through her assistant. But we, you know, we found a rhythm over time. Now, she's honestly like the most humble. Oh. The incredible thing about the whole experience was that nobody has changed. Literally no one has changed. Like, Woody's as fun and fun-loving as ever.
Yeah.
You know, every movie I've done has included a member of the original cast. 30 Minutes or Less was with Jesse. Emma was in Gangster Squad, and Woody was in Venom. So I maintain a closeness with all them. Jesse and Woody were in the Now You See movies. Movies together, so they've maintained a closeness, and then Emma just is everyone's favorite person in the world.
Yeah.
So, you know, she and Jesse and Woody have spent plenty of time together in the 10 years. So, honestly, we've all remained good friends, there was a natural, I think that was the impetus in large part to kind of make the sequel, was just to go have fun, you know, making something that we were all excited about. But I will say that Woody has said that among all the movies and things he's done in his career, the thing he kind of gets most asked the most about is Zombieland 2. When's it coming out and what's going on with that?
Awesome.
And so he felt this like immense pressure that if we're going to make a sequel, that it had to be as good as the original, because it does, you know, I don't want to toot my own horn, but it does feel like a movie that people have a special connection with. Like it's it's had some staying power. And so we all felt a responsibility to, if we're going to do it, it just has to be good. And so that's in part why it took so long to get it done, is because we just wouldn't settle on the script. We had to really make sure that it was a story worth telling and that it was going to resonate in the same way. And I think I can proudly say that we succeeded. Like I watched the movie with audiences, and I think this movie might be funnier than the original.
Awesome.
It's just a really fun, fun movie to go see.
Well, speaking of connecting with the audience, you know, a film sort of has to feel alive, and a film has to feel like it's fresh, even in the moment. And I think oftentimes people achieve that through improv. Obviously, a script is absolutely crucial, but so is the relationship between the actors. Can you speak a little bit? Obviously, you have some superstars, Woody, Middleditch, Rosario Dawson. These are unbelievable actors, obviously, Jesse and Emma and Abigail. Was there a lot of improv on the set of part two, and you can speak on part one as well, because it just comes across like these people are in the moment, it's alive, it's fresh, it's fun. Can you speak to the improv of the movie?
Sure, yeah. I mean, that's something I love doing, having come up shooting tons of comedy and being a huge fan of comedy. Like, I love improv, but improv's best when it's really character-based, and that's what I think distinguishes the improv in this movie. It's really organic to the characters, and Jesse's one of the funniest people you could possibly meet just generally, but his improv skills, he's so fast and so funny. In the first movie, there's tons of great improv. I mean, one of the lines that I love that I remember is, "You almost knocked over your alcohol with your knife," was something that Jesse came up with on the spot. And there's honestly so many improvised lines from the first film. And basically the entire Bill Murray sequence was improvised, because we cast him only 4 days before he got there. And he basically, you know, he looked at the script, but I don't think much of what he said was in it. So he really, he brought so much to the table, improvising. Like that line, you know, "Do you have any regrets, Garfield?" Maybe, like, that's a one and only Bill Murray classic that I don't think you can script, you know?
How did you know when you were going to get him for the first Zombieland? Is it like the same thing that I've heard where you didn't know that he was going to show up until he showed up on the day?
Well, it was a really kind of crazy story. The original script for Zombieland had Patrick Swayze as the celebrity whose house they go to. You know,
man.
Tallahassee's talking about, like, Roadhouse and, you know, all the amazing Patrick Swayze movies he loved. And in the script, there was a sequence where they go to his house. They're kind of looking around. They're exploring separately. Columbus goes into some room. There's a pottery wheel. He sits down at the pottery wheel, and these two hands come around behind him and hold him at his waist. And he looks over his shoulder, and it's like Patrick Swayze recreating the scene from Ghost with him. But Patrick Swayze is a zombie, like a full-blown zombie. He's not talking. He's trying to eat Columbus. So then he starts chasing him all throughout the Swayze Manor. And I forget all the twists and turns, but it ended up with him about to attack Columbus and kill him, the Swayze zombie. And then from the other end of the room, you hear Tallahassee saying, you know, "Swayze, you know, stop right there." And Swayze zombie turns. He charges Tallahassee, leaps at him. Tallahassee catches him by the waist, hoists him above his head, recreating the lift from Dirty Dancing. And then Tallahassee threw him into a wall and, you know, effectively kills him and says, "Nobody puts baby in the corner."
Oh, my God. That's incredible, dude.
Yeah, it was like this amazing sequence that, like, when Woody signed up for the movie, like, it was one of his favorite parts. And, you know, everybody just, like, but then through the process of making the movie was when Patrick Swayze sadly got sick with cancer.
Right.
And so he was never attached officially, but, like, it, you know, it just wasn't even a possibility. And so from that point on, we, like, I don't know if I'm speaking out of school, but we approached a lot of different celebrities to kind of parody themselves with different zombie versions of themselves.
Right.
And we sent scripts to, you know, Sylvester Stallone, where there was like Rocky and Rambo references. And it was all kind of tied to Tallahassee's, you know, if you were to go to Beverly Hills and try and go to some celebrity's manor, who would it be? So right. Stallone. And we kind of went down the list to the point where we got to like Joe Pesci draft and then Mark Hamill draft. And like oh, everybody man. Was passing. Like we just couldn't get anyone to commit to it, to the point where we ended up having to say, okay, well, despite the fact this was everyone's favorite sequence in the movie, we're going to just have to go with like an old Jewish, you know, couple. Like the joke was they go into the house and they see Bubby and Peepaw and all these photos around. And they're the sweetest old couple. And then these old zombies attack them. And like, we got to the point where we had found the house, this rich Beverly Hills house. We had cast these two older stunt people to play Bubby and Peepaw. We had been rehearsing with them what the fight would be like. It's like 2 weeks before shooting, and Woody just was like, "Nah, this is such a missed opportunity. Like, we got to figure this out."
Nice.
And he had heard that Bill Murray was in Atlanta shooting where we were shooting, and so he's like, "I'm gonna ask Bill Murray," and he called his 1-800 number. And they obviously had a relationship through Kingpin. And so about a week before, this was a week before, actually, before we were due to shoot it, he got Bill Murray. And Bill Murray's like, "Oh, it's such a shame. I just went back to New York. I'm not in Atlanta anymore." But somehow Woody convinced him to do it.
Aww.
And Bill Murray's only note was like, "If I'm going to be in the movie, I can't just be a zombie. I have to have some lines. What if I'm dressed as a zombie to try and throw off the zombies, but I'm not really a zombie?"
Dude,
if you're going to have Bill Murray, you want to have him talking.
Of course. Yeah.
He came up with that idea. Sony, like, you know, in 4 days got us like tons of Ghostbusters swag from their, you know, the art department figured out how to make, you know, that house a little bit more Bill Murray. And he came in at like 11 a.m. We had a PA posted at the airport just to make sure he'd show. He came in at like 11 a.m. and then shot for that afternoon. I think he and Woody went out real late that night. The next day we shot till a full day with him. And he kept saying really funny stuff to me. Like whenever I'd do a take and I'd give him a note, he'd be like, "What now, Squirt?" Or, "What now, first timer?" And then we ended up like drinking late at that mansion where we shot at. Like it was like Bill Murray was behind the bar making margaritas for people.
Oh my god!
But, you know, the last time I ever saw him, it was like a dream. I had a dream that like for a day and a half I got to hang out with Bill Murray.
Ah, that's so much damn fun.
That is so awesome. Again, we are speaking with Ruben Fleischer. He is the director of Zombieland and Zombieland Double Tap. Zombieland Double Tap is going to hit theaters October 18th. So make sure you get your tickets. When it comes to making a sequel, obviously a question that is often asked by the audience, such as Henry and myself, is, do I need to see the first Zombieland to understand Zombieland Double Tap? So could you speak a little bit to that? Do people have to see Zombieland, or can they just take a deep dive into this world and sort of pick up on the nuances or what they missed in the first film?
I definitely don't think you need to see the first movie to enjoy this one, because it's a really great story with really funny people. But I think you'll enjoy it even more if you have seen the first one, because there's a bunch of references to it and inside jokes that will be all the more funny if you get the reference.
This is a question that I think Henry and I both have, because we've been to Hollywood. We've pitched our shows. We've sat in those meetings.
And they are great. And as you can see, they have just been, the offer's been rolling in, sir.
It's like, we are saying no. We were like, no, you know, we're going to need more from you. What was it like pitching this? Now, this was obviously 2009 when or I would assume you had to pitch well before that, before the film came out. But horror and comedy, it's not always the easiest for studio heads to understand. They're like, so it's not a comedy and it's not a horror film. What is this? How was that pitch project, or how was that pitch process, rather, like for you? Did you find people accepting the notion, or was it more like pulling teeth and being like, no, this can be done. This is actually what the audience wants.
Well, the evolution of the project was a little atypical, because and I don't want to get too much in the weeds like I did on that Bill Murray story, but like this started out as a TV show. It was a TV pilot that Warnick and Reese wrote. And so there was an existing script that I think was, don't quote me, but for the Sci-Fi Network or something like that. And they said, yeah, I don't know. And then so the producer, Gavin Plum, said, well, what if we do it as like a TV movie? And if it works as a TV movie, then maybe it can spawn a series. And I said, okay, well, why don't you write the script and we'll see what it looks like. And they wrote the script and they turned in the network and they said, this is just too expensive. And so Gavin, being an industrious producer, said, okay, fine, I'll just do it as a feature. And so he sold that spec TV pilot movie script to Sony. And so they bought it based on the strength of the writing, which I think we can all agree these guys are just so funny and so original. I think it was hard to not deny. The challenge for me coming into it was that it was written as a movie that was sort of meant to launch a series, so it didn't have as much of a beginning, middle, and end as a traditional film would want to. So my contribution to it was kind of coming up with the idea of Pacific Playland as this destination that they're driving to and making it, you know, basically stealing from Vacation and making it into more of a traditional road trip movie.
So what was the catalyst then to change it from that TV series into a film? Because obviously that's a heck of a transition to have to make. Did they just, at some point, did they just call you and be like, yo, it's a movie now, you know, get on making it a film?
I wasn't involved prior to that, but okay. I think that it was really just that the network wasn't going to make the show in any version, and that the producer and the writers were committed to figuring out a way to get it made. And so they just took it to the movie studio, and those guys saw the potential in it.
Awesome. That means a lot, though. That's hard because you have to stick to it. You get a lot of no's. You hear that story all the time. The guys from Stranger Things, they were told no countless times, and then they end up sticking to it, which it does sound crazy, but for them it worked.
Yeah, I think that's the only way to win. And you just got to, if you really believe in something, you can't take no for an answer. I mean, it's such a cliche, but that's the only way to get good stuff made, I think, is if it, especially things that, to go back to your original question, are haven't been done before. You know, American Werewolf in London, I think, is a terrific horror comedy and maybe the best horror comedy. But I don't know that it probably was a big hit actually because it got a sequel made. But I mean, it's just not as traditional a genre. It's always tricky, I guess, when you mix genres. I don't know that if we'd started with the original script now that we could have got it made. It's just a different landscape. I think the only reason the sequel is getting made is because the first one exists. But if we were to start from scratch with that Zombieland script, I think it would be a really hard argument in this marketplace.
There's a certain democracy to the audience showing up, and then you're like, see, we won.
We got them. We put butts in seats. But the zombie genre has become it's chock full. Right. There is so much zombie stuff. When you guys started in 2009, when Zombieland first came out, I want to say it was probably also around the time that Walking Dead at least the comic book was out hardcore.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
I know that. So but now there's zombies everywhere. Do you end up taking more of that into consideration? Because there are now serious versions of Zombieland between the hyper serious like The Road or Stakeland, or these various places that are essentially hardcore, dark versions of Zombieland. Did you end up having to take any of that into consideration? Do you go and watch all of this other side pieces to the genre to see if it can inform the comedy?
No, I probably should have, but for me, I was just focused on just trying to maintain the spirit of the original as much as possible, because I think that's, if you're going to go see this movie, I feel like it's because you have a connection to the original. There's a funny moment where Columbus is reading a Walking Dead comic book in the film, and he says, "This is so terrifying, but also so unrealistic."
That's
and
great.
He's speaking as somebody in a zombie post-apocalypse. So I think there is a little wink. Emma at one point pitched an idea that the zombie team, the Zombieland squad, would be going across the country, and then they'd run across some of the errant members of The Walking Dead, but we didn't end up doing that.
Yeah.
We tried to not worry too much about it, but at least give it a little bit of a nod.
That is so awesome, man. Well, my final question, again, Zombieland, Double Tap, October 18th. Go check out this film. I suppose my final question is, you're an audience member. You go, you purchase your ticket, you sit down in the seat. What are you going to feel? What are you going to walk out of the film feeling? What do you want the audience to absorb when watching this movie?
The movie's just so fun. It's really like an amazingly fun movie. It's just got so many great jokes, so many laughs, really great action. It's just fun. And I think it's to the credit of the cast. It's just, they're four of the most, you know, charismatic and charming people that you could hope to find. So just getting to hang out with them again is just a delight. And then I tried to add some bigger stakes with like bigger action set pieces and, tougher, stronger, more zombies, and you always got to go bigger in a sequel. But at its core, this movie is about the characters and their relationship and the fun that they have in this unexpected place.
I love it. Awesome, man. Ruben Fleischer, the director of Zombieland and Zombieland Double Tap, again, October 18th. We are going to go. Absolutely. Cannot wait.
Cannot wait, man. Thank you so much for talking with us.
Yes, thank you so much,
really,
man.
Really appreciate it, you guys.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. It says here I have to talk about something I need to get off my chest, and I guess I can share it here. I eat mayonnaise for fun. It's a hobby of mine, and it's an addiction. And it's a daily weight on my life, how much I need whipped egg whites and oil crammed into my veins. As soon as I wake up, and a lot of people carry around a lot of different stressors, big and small. Some people are presidents. Some people are soldiers. Some people have to eat mayonnaise, especially with hard-boiled eggs, which is what I eat for lunch. But I guess I should share that in therapy. Because therapy is a safe place to get things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down. And what I do is I just add eggs if I have mayonnaise left over. I just continue to add the eggs. But if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. I hope they can help me. My God. I hope they can help me. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/lastpod today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp. HELP.com/lastpod.
This podcast is brought to you by Squarespace. It's the all-in-one website platform for entrepreneurs who are looking to stand out and succeed online. Everyone knows the holidays can take a toll on your bank account. If you're looking for a creative way to increase revenue and give your family and friends the holiday treats they deserve, then you need to get started with Squarespace's new feature, Squarespace Courses. If I needed to give a class on digging holes, I'd do it. Squarespace has the tools you need to create and sell your own online course. Start with a professional layout that fits your brand. Upload video lessons to teach techniques and skills. And tailor your course with the powerful built-in Fluid Engine Editor. Plus, you can charge a one-time fee or you can sell subscriptions. Turn your creativity into income with Squarespace Courses. Head to squarespace.com for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, go to www.squarespace.com/left to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/left.